For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is April the 29th, and we are in Trei Asar in Zephaniah, Perek Gimel, Chapter 3 of Zephaniah. So the pasuk says, "Hoy mora v'nigala ha'ir hayona." Hoy is a language of crying out of woe. Mora and nigala are both words that imply something that is rancid, that is spoiled. Ha'ir hayona, the city of the yona. Now, a yona we know is a dove. This city that is mentioned here is referring to Yerushalayim. In the previous parak, the Navi had spoken about the destruction of many of the enemies of the Jews. And with that, the Navi ended up, Zephaniah ended up speaking about Nineveh and the ultimate destruction of Nineveh. But now we're switching to Yerushalayim, as you will see that Yerushalayim is going to be taken to task for its averos as well. So why is it called the city of the Yona? So there are several explanations given. I'm going to tell you three of them. One explanation is because the Yona is a bird. It's a dove, is a bird that is easily enticed. I can't tell you from my own experience if that's the case. I don't know much about birds, but evidently the Yona is a bird that is easily enticed. And so the Yerushalayim is being called the city of the Yona because it was easily enticed to do averos. Another explanation for why it says the city of the Yona is because the Yona is a beautiful bird, and Yerushalayim is the city that should be the city of the Yona. It should be a beautiful city, but unfortunately, where they were doing averos. Finally, one of the explanations is, the Medrash says, because since we were just talking about Nineveh, and Nineveh is known as the city of Yona, since Yona was sent there to give them Musar, to admonish them, as we know from the Haftorah of Yom Kippur. So the city of Yerushalayim was behaving like the city of the Yona, like the city of Nineveh. And so the title here it's given is Ha'ir Hayona. Pasuk Beis verse 2. Lo shama bekol, they did not listen to the sound, the voice of Hashem. Lo lakham musar, they did not take criticism. Hashem lo vatacha, and Hashem they did not rely. El elokeha lo kareva, they did not get close to their God. Sareha v'kirba, its governors in its midst, arayos shoagim, were like roaring lions, which means rather than care for the people, they frightened the people. Shofeteha ze'eve erev, their judges were like wolves of the night. Lo garmu laboker, that didn't leave any food over for morning. The word garam can mean bone. That they like a wolf would eat its food and eat every last morsel, even the bones, and not leave anything over till morning. And so too, the judges would take advantage of people and not leave anything out. Nevi'eha pochazim, it's nevi'im, it's prophets were lying. Anshei bogdos, men of rebellion. Kohaneha chivlu kodesh, it's kohanim were profaning that which was holy. Chamsu Torah, they stole Torah. Now how does one steal Torah? What does that mean to steal Torah? So the Mefarshim explain, the commentators explain, stealing Torah is not teaching Torah. Someone who knows Torah and refuses to teach it, that is in effect stealing Torah. We find this concept, this idea, or this usage of the word chamas, theft, used in Parshas Lech Lecha, when Sarah Imenu says to Avraham Avinu, chamasi alecha, my theft is because of you. So what happened over there? In that case, Avraham Avinu and Sarah didn't have any children, so Sarah gave her maid Hagar to Avraham that he should marry her. And then Hagar looked down at Sarah. So Sarah said to Avraham, "Chamasi alecha, my theft is upon you," meaning because Hagar became pregnant immediately after marrying Avraham. And Sarah says to Avraham that you're holding back your words from me. You're not admonishing Hagar. You're not caring for me in not having children. So that's called chamas. It's called theft because he's holding something back from her. And so here the word chamas means holding back the Torah that the person knows and not teaching it. Pasuk, hey, verse 5. Hashem tzadik bekirba. Hashem is, of course, righteous within Yerushalayim. Lo ya'aseh avla. He will not do any iniquity. Now remember that phrase, lo ya'aseh avla. We're going to bring it up later on. Baboker, baboker mishpato yitain lo. Yitain la'ar, every morning his judgment he will bring to light. Hashem brings his judgment to light. Lo ne'edor, it is not held back. But v'lo yodea avol boshes. But the avol, meaning the people of Yerushalayim who were sinners, would not know of Hashem. They would act as if they did not know Hashem, and that would be shameful. Pasuk vav verse 6. Now the next two psukim, Vav and Zion, are critical psukim. We'll read them now, but we're going to come back to them later on. Hichrati goyim, I cut off the nations. Nashamu pinosam, I have destroyed their towers. Hichrati chutzosam mibli over, I have made their streets desolate with no one going through. Nitzdu harehem mibli ish me'en yoshev, I've destroyed their cities that there be no people, no one dwelling there. Amarti, I said, Ach tiri osi, only you, meaning you Jews, should fear me. Tikhi musr, take criticism. V'lo yikareis me'ona, and all those that live in Yerushalayim, the houses of Yerushalayim should not be cut off. Kol asher pakarti aleha, all the good that I had decreed upon it should not be held back. Achein hishkimu hishchisu kol alilosam, but instead they rose up early and they were acted in a destructive manner with all of their poor behavior. So until this point, we have criticism of Yerushalayim. Now Hashem tells us what to look forward to. Lachain, therefore, chakuli nu'um Hashem. Hashem says, wait for me. L'yom kumi la'ad, the day that I get up to join with you, to meet with you. Ki mishpati la'esof goyim, because it is my judgment to gather the nations, likavtsi mamlachos, to another word for gather, the kingdoms, lishpoch alehem zami, to pour upon them my wrath, kol charon api, all of my anger, ki be'esh kinasi te'achel kol ha'aretz, because with the fire of my anger, or of my zealousness, the entire world will be consumed, ki oz, because then, after that, poch elamim safa v'rura, I will turn for the nations, a clear speech, Safa's lips, but it means a clear speech. Vikro chulam b'shem Hashem, that they all should call out in the name of Hashem. la'avdo shchem echad, that they will serve him in one way. They'll all serve him together. They'll all serve Hashem together. From here, there are many midrashim and gemaras that say that in the future, there will be mass gerus, that many, many people will convert to Yiddishkeit, to Judaism, because they will see the truth of Hashem. May Eiver Lenahar Chush, from the other side of the river Kush, of the rivers of Kush, Asarai Bas Putzai, those who daven to me, Asarai is those who daven to me, Bas Putzai are those of mine who were scattered, Yovilun Minchasi will bring my gifts, meaning my Jews who are in Galus, who are in exile, those who daven to me, those who are scattered, they will bring me my gifts. Vayomahu, on that day, Lusi Voshim be called Ali Losayach, you will no longer be ashamed of all of your poor behavior. Asher Pashata be that you were negligent against me. Why will you not be ashamed? Ki az asir mikirbeich alize ga'avaseich, because I will remove from your midst your arrogance. Below so sifi legav ha'od bahar kadshi, you will no longer be arrogant on my sanctified mountain. V'hishar'ti v'kirbeich, and I will leave in your midst, am ani v'dol, a nation that is poor, which means acting in an impoverished way, which means without arrogance. V'chasu b'shem Hashem, and they will have mercy on the name of Hashem, they will care about the name of Hashem. And Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, is a famous verse. She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla, the remnant of the Jewish people will not do any iniquities. V'lo yidabru chazav, they will not speak any falsehood. V'lo yimatzei b'fiyem lashon remes, will not be found in their mouths a tongue of that speaks falsehood. Ki hema yiru v'ravtzu v'imacharid, because they will graze, which means they'll live peacefully, and they will increase, and they will not be afraid. Here we find the remnant of the Jewish people will not do avla. That's the language here. Lo yasu avla, they will not do any iniquity. If you hold the place here and turn back to Pasuk Hey, verse 5, I mentioned to you at the time when we read it, it says, Hashem tzadik b'kirba, Hashem is a tzadik within the midst of Yerushalayim, lo yasa avla, he will not do iniquity. Here, the remnant of the Jewish people will be like Hashem, lo yasu avla, they will not do any iniquity. Again, we're going to come back to this pasuk. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14, Rani bas tzion, hariu Yisrael, rejoice, bas tzion, another word for rejoice, Jewish people, simchi va'olzi b'cholev, being extremely happy with all your heart, bas Yerushalayim, those who dwell in Yerushalayim. Yisir Hashem mishpatayich, Hashem has removed your judgments, which means those who would judge against you, those who would hurt you. Pina oyveich, your enemies have been removed. Melech Yisrael, Hashem bekirbeich, the king of Yisrael, who is Hashem, is in your midst. Lo siri ra'od, you will no longer fear evil. Bayomahu, on that day, ye'amer li Yerushalayim al tira'i, will be said about Yerushalayim, do not be afraid. Tzion al yirpu yadayich, Tzion, your hands will not be weak. Hashem alokayich b'kirbeich, Hashem, your God is in your midst. Gibor Yoshia, the strong one who will save you. Yasis alayich b'simcha, he, Hashem, will rejoice on you with happiness. Yacharish ba'ahavaso, he will quiet the sins or will quiet the prosecution against you with his love. Yagil alayich berina, again, he will rejoice on you with joy. Nuge mi moed, those who stood against the moed could mean a holiday, but it really means a meeting with Hashem. Those who did not want to meet with me, asavti mimeich, I removed them from you. I'm sorry, I stopped in the wrong place. Nugi Mimoe, those who were not interested in meeting with me, Asavti, I removed them. Mimechayu, they were from you. Masas Aleha Kherpa, Masas Aleha Kherpa, they were ashamed to you. They were an embarrassment to you, and I removed them. Hinni Oses called me Anayech Ba'isahi. I am going to stop all those who would hold you back at that time. And I will save those who are lame, and those who have been pushed away I will gather in. And I will put them for praise and for fame. In all the land that they had been ashamed. On that day I will bring you, on that time I will bring you, in the time that I will gather you, I'll give you standing and praise, and all the nations of the land, when I return those of you who were taken captive to you in front of your eyes, Amar Hashem, says Hashem. The Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Yud Gimel verse 13, She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla v'lo yidabru chazav v'lo yimatze b'fiyem l'shon tarmis, that the Jewish people will not do any iniquity, they will not speak falsehood, they will not be found in their mouths the tongue of falsehood, of lies. This is a phrase, this Pasuk is brought frequently. Cited frequently in the Gemara and in the Midrashim to say that we staunchly believe that Jews are at heart truth tellers, that we do not lie, at least not habitually, not regularly. We seek the truth. The Gemara tells us, for example, that there are several legal cases that the Gemara rules on based on this pasuk. That when you use a pasuk like this to rule in a halachic manner or in a legal manner, that shows how strong the pasuk is taken, how strongly it's taken. So for example, the Gemara tells us that a husband and wife had a disagreement over who they should marry their daughter to, who should be the shidduch for their daughter. Now in those days, it was very common to look to your own relatives for a suitable match for your daughter. The relatives, of course, were not relatives that are prohibited. They were a little bit distant, but still they looked to their own relatives. So he wanted his daughter to marry one of his relatives from his side of the family, and she, the mother, wanted her daughter to marry someone from her side of the family. So the husband and wife were in this disagreement. So the Gemara tells us what typically happens in this situation, which is that the wife managed to, it says that she forced her husband, which means she convinced him, and she got him to agree that they would marry their daughter to a relative from her side of the family. So they made a party and they had the chasana and they were getting things together. It was the middle of the ceremony hadn't yet started. They hadn't done the chuppah yet. They weren't doing whatever they were doing. Perhaps it was in the middle of the Kabbalah Spanim. They're taking pictures, whatever it is. Meanwhile, the relatives from his side of the family, they decided that they would take matters into their own hands, and they got hold of the girl. I imagine this was, the Gemara says it was a young girl, and the girl was under bas mitzvah, which means that her father has the right to marry her. That's very important to know, that a girl under bas mitzvah, a father can marry her off, but not her mother. Only her father can. So they got the girl to come with them to the attic, to the second floor, and there was the prospective chassan from his side of the family, and the relatives from his side of the family made a quick ceremony and married her off to his relative. But he was not there. The father was not there. The mother was not there. And they had him put a ring on her finger and whatever it was. So the Shaila then came to the Rabbanim. So is she in fact married to the relative from his side of the family, or was that a whole ceremony just a sham and it's meaningless? So what does that depend on? That depends on whether it was with the father's consent, because since the father is able to marry off his daughter, so if it's with the father's consent, then that ceremony would count. If it was not with the father's consent, then that ceremony would not count. So, well, we know that he very much wanted his daughter to marry someone from his side of the family. So that would seem to imply that this was with his consent, and therefore that marriage should work. And the perspective chassam from the mother's side of the family lost his shidduch. But the Gemara says no, that we can be sure that the father did not consent to this wedding, to this ceremony. Why not? Because even though he very much originally wanted his daughter to marry someone from his side of the family, but since the pasuk says in Sefanya, "She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla v'lo yedabru chaza v'lo yimtzas v'fiem v'lo yimtzas v'fiem lashon tarmis," Jewish people tell the truth, seek the truth, and do not lie. So once he capitulated to his wife and said, "Okay, we will marry her to someone from your side of the family," we can be sure that he did not consent to the marriage that they tried to set up with the relative from his side of the family, even though that's what he had wanted the whole time. So here we find this pasuk being used even in a legal sense, in a very serious legal sense, because if this is not true, meaning if really he did consent to that marriage, then she's an eishes ish, she's a married woman, and we're going to take her without a get and give her to somebody else. That's a serious offense, obviously. That would be giloy arayas. Be immorality, would be adultery. And yet we base a halachic ruling on this pasuk. That should give us pause that we Jews should be known for our truth telling, for our adherence to truth, to our always seeking the truth and avoiding lying, and to be known for that. That's something which, as I said, the Gemara uses even in a halachic sense. Earlier, Pasuk Vav and Zion, verses 6 and 7, we have the psukim that Hashem says that I did something to give you Jewish people Musar, to give you criticism, admonish you, to get you to do the right things. What does it say? If Rati Goyim, I cut off the nations, Nashamu Pino Sum, I have destroyed their towers, I have made their cities desolate, or their streets desolate, of anybody passing through. I've made their cities desolate of any man, any person, from anybody dwelling there. Why did I do this? Amarti, I said, ach, tikhi musr, ach tiri osi, you should fear me, tikhi musr, you should take criticism. And all the houses should not be cut off. All that I had wanted to do for them, that shouldn't be stopped. All the good that I had intended for them. But they instead have done sins that have stopped me from being able to do what I wanted to do. I'm going to pause here. There's a question. Did the uncle of the bas mitzvah girl, what does that say? Does the uncle of the bas mitzvah girl have a say in the marriage? Well, did the under bas mitzvah girl have a say in the marriage? It doesn't say in the Gemara whether she did or didn't. A father can marry off his daughter without her consent, although it is not a good idea. So this pasuk tells us, these pasukim tell us that the Hashem says, I destroyed the nations, I made their cities desolate. Why? So that you'll take Musar. Now, this is a powerful, powerful pasuk, and it is quoted in several places. And it is a very, very important way to look at life. Rashi quotes these psukim in Sefanya, when dealing with the very famous question in Parshas Va'era of when the Pasuk says, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu regarding Paro, Vani achazek eslav Paro, I will harden the heart of Paro, and he will not agree to let the Jews go. So everybody asks the question, why would Hashem do that? Not how does he do it. We know how he does it. He can do whatever he wants. But why does he do it? And how does that fit philosophically with what we know is Hashem's regular way of running the world? We know that free will the whole point of the world is to have free will. If there's no free will, there's no point in having creation. The whole point of creation is to have man that has the struggle to choose good over evil, and that we struggle all the time to choose the right thing. And that's what's supposed to be. And that in the, by choosing the right thing and avoiding the wrong thing, that's how we achieve shlemos, that's how we achieve perfection, that's how we achieve tov, goodness, and olam haba, and getting close to Hashem, which is what it's all about, and bringing out kvod shamay, and bringing out the honor of heaven. That's what we're here for. Without free will, then the purpose of creation is lost. Moreover, we know that Hashem is fair, and he does not punish if someone does not have a choice. Hashem only punishes because a person chose to do the wrong thing. So if Paro was not able to choose the right thing, he was only choosing the wrong thing, so then how is it that Hashem could punish him and hurt him? Because that's what happens with the Makos. The first five of the plagues, Paro chooses to defy Hashem, so he gets what's coming to him. But after that, the last five, the four from the sixth one and on, it says that Hashem hardened his heart. So then how is it fair that he keeps getting smacked and smacked and smacked and smacked when he's not choosing to do the wrong thing? So philosophically, how is it justified? Now, there are several answers given to this question, many answers given to this question, and virtually everybody, all the Rishonim, everybody deals with the question. For example, some suggest that it doesn't mean that Hashem took away Paro's free will entirely. It just means that Hashem evened the playing field a little bit, where normally these types of plagues would take away a person's ability to choose because the plagues are so horrific that no one could withstand them. Hashem gave Paro the ability to choose whether he wanted to listen or not. And Paro still chose to reject Hashem. That's one approach. Another approach is that, yes, it's true, Hashem took away his ability to choose, but the punishments were not for his choosing to defy Hashem now. The punishments were for all he did before this point. He just deserved a lot of punishment. And even though now he was not choosing to defy Hashem, but he had defied Hashem enough, and therefore deserved a lot of punishment. He had caused a lot of harm to the Jewish people before when he did have free will, and now he was getting what he deserved. And there are other approaches as well. But I want to share with you what Rashi says. Rashi says as follows. He says, you know, the Paro has, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Paro has been hitris lefanai. He's rebelled against me. He's rejected me. He's been chutzpedik. He's not cared about anything I have to say. So at this point, says Hashem, I know that the heart of the non-Jews is not close to tshuva. Yes, he could be beaten into submission. He could be forced to a point where he's going to do teshuva, and it'll be some modicum of tshuva. But the truth of the matter is, he's not really interested in me. He's just trying to avoid getting beaten up. So the truth is, at this point, says Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, Paro doing tshuva or not doing tshuva, that's really immaterial to me. He's not important to me. What's important to me is how you Jews behave. That's much more important to me. And therefore, says Hashem, what I'm going to do is I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to beat him to a pulp. without giving him any choice. And the reason is not for him. The reason is for you. So that you, Jews, will see what I do to him. And that will strike fear in your hearts. And you will know a few things. You'll know, first of all, that I love you, Jews. That's why I'm beating up Paro. But you'll also know that this is what happens when someone disobeys me. He gets beaten up. And you Jews will tremble a little bit and think twice before you use your free will to defy me, says Hashem. And Rashi says, and we find this in the Psukim in Tzefanya, here in Perek Gimel chapter 3, Psukim Vav and Zayin 6 and 7, that we find that Hashem says, I have destroyed, I've cut off the nations, I've destroyed their towers, I've made their streets desolate and their cities bereft of people. Why? Ach amarti tiri osi, you should fear me. Tikhi musar, you should take admonishment. You should learn from here. And Rashi says there in Parshas Va'era, as he quotes the Gemara, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi purani osa uma sa olam, Hashem does not bring calamity on the nations of the world, only so that we Jews will take musar. Now, what this means, we're going to explain it a little bit more. What this means is that what this means is somebody wrote in that it sounds like now the streets are empty. That is true. It does sound like now the streets are empty. We'll apply it to now soon. So what this means is that whenever there is a calamity in the world, something really bad that happens, and a lot of people are hurt or killed, then Tzefanya is saying, you should know, you Jews should know, why did Hashem do it? To make you afraid of him. That's why he did it. Do you know why he brought a tsunami to Bangladesh and killed 100,000 people? That's to scare you Jews. You know why he brought a terrible sickness to Africa that killed a lot of people? That was to scare you Jews. You know why he brought an earthquake, a volcano, a hurricane, whatever it is, and it killed a lot of people, non-Jews, who are not where there are no Jews there. That's why I picked those places where there's no Jews. There's no one there. Doesn't matter. The reason why was or is to scare you Jews. That's what Rashi tells us is going on. Now, clearly this has to be understood in context, because what does that mean? Does that mean Hashem just kills people or hurts people who don't deserve to be hurt or killed, and it's only to scare us? So then how is that fair to them? Really, that's what Rashi is saying over here with Paro, that Paro is getting beaten up because, so that we will take Musar, that we will learn from him. So we have to explain that a little bit. But before we explain that, I want to emphasize this point, that very often when something bad happens, the question that we ask ourselves is, who did it impact? Did it impact people we know? Did it impact fellow Jews? Is it in a place where there are a lot of Jews? It's not that we're callous and we don't care for the rest of humanity, but it certainly bothers us a lot more if it's hurting people that we know or it's hurting our fellow Jews. But the truth is, Rashi's telling us that even when it is only hurting non-Jews, it is still for us to take Musar. That's the reason for it. So what about the question about the people who got hurt? What about the people who got killed? What about Paro? So really Rashi answers that question. Rashi says, Paro has been defiant over and over and over again. Let's be clear. Paro is no tzaddik. Paro is a huge Russia. Paro has been defiant to Hashem over and over and over again. The first five plagues, he speaks defiantly. He speaks with chutzpah. He has been cruel to the Jews. He's beaten the Jews. He's hurt the Jews. He's had their babies thrown into the river. This is not a good man. This is a man who deserves to get beaten up. Nevertheless, even though he deserves to get beaten up, there's a certain point in time where he's getting beaten up ceases to be primarily about him and instead becomes primarily about the Jews. That's what Rashi is telling us. That even though it is possible that there may be things that happen that are because of him and we don't even know about it, that a person gets hurt or a person, something happens in a person. But at a certain point, the main reason why something is happening is for the Jews, which means as follows. We know that we Jews are subject generally to something called Hashgacha Pratis. Hashgacha Pratis means, Hashgacha means oversight. Hashem oversees us, and Pratis means specific or individual. Whereas there's something else called Hashgacha Klalis. Hashgacha Klalis means general oversight. Hashem runs the world on multiple levels. There's a general running of the world. Overall, is the world going to generally be healthy, generally have food, generally be pleasant, generally have things go well or not well? That's a general din on the world. There's also a general din. It's a little more specific, but it's still very general. On countries, is this country going to be healthy? Is this country going to be stable? Is this country going to be at peace? Is this country going to be at war? Is this country going to be have economic stability or not? That is also, it is a little more specific than the whole world, but it's still very general. We say this on Rosh Hashanah and on Kippur in the davening that we talk about Ezel, Acherev, etc. We talk about the various judgments that happen. Those general judgments can be more specific. They could be more targeted. Cities, neighborhoods, there could be general judgments. Those general judgments, though, even though they become more and more specific as you narrow down the area that is being judged, whether it's the whole world, the country, the city, the neighborhood, the locality, whatever it is, still, they're not so individual because they're not targeting a specific person. It's still general in that it is about a group. The group may be a smaller and smaller group, but it is still a group. It could even be a family, but it is a group. Usually, the way Hashem deals with the rest of the world other than us is with Hashgacha Klalis, which means that which happens to the individuals is usually more of a general sweeping judgment. That's not to say that the individuals are not judged. They are eventually judged. Certainly after death, the individual is judged, that's for sure. But the way that it normally works, the day in, day out, things that happen to people throughout the course of the day, throughout the course of their week or month or year, for most people of the world, it is not a specific judgment. It is much more of a general judgment because there is a general din that there will be a certain level of sickness. There is a general din, there'll be a certain level of stability or instability, etc. So these general levels, they affect everybody, and they particularly affect these the most people of the world. So that's the way it generally works for the nations of the world. We Jews are also subject to Hashgacha Klalis. We are also subject to these general judgments, just like everybody else. We're subject to them. But in addition to that, we have Hashgacha Pratis. We have more specific judgment. Now, the truth is that Jews who behave like non-Jews forfeit the right to Hashgacha Pratis, to specific judgment. Jews have to behave like Jews to be able to merit having Ashgacha Pratis. And in fact, the greater a tzaddik a person is, the more righteous a person is, the more Ashgacha Pratis they have. Then their judgment is more and more specific. Hashem deals more directly with them and them alone. Because most of the world, the judgment is in Hashgacha Klalis, it's more of a general judgment. Therefore, that which makes Hashem choose how to handle a particular, let's say a particular country, the way Hashem handles a particular country is what goes into that decision is broader because it's a lot of people and it's more sweeping. So what would make Hashem decide that this country is going to have economic stability, this country is going to have sickness, this country is going to have violent weather, this country is going to have peace, this country is going to have war? What would make Hashem decide that? And the answer to that is that there's just much more going on in Hashem's decision making. It's broader. The main thing that affects the Hashgacha Klalis, that general oversight, that general judgment, what's the main thing that Hashem uses to decide what's going to happen? How it will affect the Jews. That's the main thing. So meaning, let's say there's a country where the people in the country have sinned and sinned and sinned and sinned. And, you know, Hashem could wait and allow them more of a chance to do teshuva. Hashem could punish them. What's going to trigger whether Hashem is going to punish them or give them more time to do teshuva? The main thing that's going to decide that is the impact on the Jews. If we Jews need a lesson, we need to see something that will scare us, that may trigger that Hashem will decide to bring punishment, meaning not that they don't deserve the punishment, they do deserve the punishment, but that what triggered it now? Why not last year? Why not next year? Because the Jews need the lesson. That's the main trigger of what the Hashgacha Klalis, the general oversight of Hashem. And that is what is being said here with Paro. Paro is a king. A king, by definition, represents the country, and therefore whatever is being done with the king is really over the whole country. And Hashem says that I'm making an example out of Paro, which represents the Egyptians, primarily for you Jews. And here Tzafania is saying, you should know that that is the case, that when things happen, it is primarily for the Jewish people. That's why it's happening. Now, that means that when there was an outbreak in China of this terrible virus, we didn't know much about it. I don't know how widespread it was, how understood it was, but at least at that time, even if it would have stayed contained in China, it still would have been for us. The message would have been for us. Again, not that there's no, calculation over there as well. Of course there is. And not that you don't have as well different reasons why bad things happen. Sometimes it's for punishment, sometimes it's not. Still, the main trigger would be us. That would be the main trigger. All the more so as it has spread and now we are directly affected and so many of our own have been hurt or killed because of this terrible virus. So clearly the main message is for us. But that would be true even if it didn't hurt us directly, even if it was really only affecting places where Jews do not live. It doesn't matter. Still, the main message is for us. This epidemic is a worldwide issue. It is hurting everybody, and we have to have compassion, and we have to daven that Hashem stop it. But we have to also recognize that the main reason is for us. whether it is to scare us, whether it is for another reason, but the main reason is for us. And that is what Sefanya is saying. And this is true for any type of calamity that occurs anywhere in the world to enough people that it becomes public knowledge, then the message is for us. And it's a very, very important thing to remember that and to know that, because that really transforms how a person views different types of messages, different things in the news. I'm reading this message over here. Why send us a message if we don't know exactly what it means and what we should change? That's a good question. In general, we don't know these days much about anything. We don't have Nevi'im, we don't have prophets, and therefore all messages are only going to be filtered as best as we can. But Hashem knows that. That's already built into the system, that Hashem knows that we're not going to know specific answers because we do not have Nevi'im, we don't have prophets, and Hashem only expects us to take out of it the best that we can take out of it. The here, at the very least, we have the message of Tzefanya, which is, Ach Amarti Ach Tiri Yosi, I said only you should fear me, Tikhi Musar, take criticism, and don't forfeit all the bracha that I want to give you, says Hashem. So yes, we don't know for which Avera or Averos we're being criticized. We don't know exactly the message, but we do know that we need to take Musar, that we need to fear Hashem. The Rambam writes that a person who is, when there is a calamity going on and a person ignores it, the Rambam says that person is a cruel person. So the Mefarshim, the commentaries say, what do you mean a cruel person? He's a callous person. Why is he a cruel person? So the commentaries explain the Rambam means that because clearly the reason for a calamity is to take Musar and to fear Hashem. So if someone does not take that message, then God forbid, then the message is wasted, and then Hashem might have to, God forbid, do it again, or God forbid, continue it. And what we're expected to do is to sit up and take notice and to improve ourselves, and that would give the message meaning, and then perhaps Hashem would end it and take it away. So that this is a very, very timely message of Tzefanya in Perek Gimel, Psukim Vav and Zion. We are going to stop here, and Amir Tzashem, next week we will begin with Sefer Chagai.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.